Hi, I'm Scott Simon. You know, Up First is here for you to help you stay on top of what's happening in the world, to keep you informed in a way that's reliable, quick, and easy. And now it's your turn to be there for Up First. It's made possible by your NPR member station. And so today we're asking you to support them before this year ends. It's fast and easy. Just go to donate.npr.org/upfirst, and thank you very much. An American graduate student imprisoned in Tehran since 2016 is free today.
Xiaowei Wang was freed in a prisoner exchange. We'll have the latest on how it happened.
I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro, and this is Up First from NPR News.
Plus, after an historically diverse field early on, Democrats are likely to have an all-white roster on the next debate stage.
Senator Cory Booker is still in the race, but has yet to qualify for that debate.
It is a problem that we now have an overall campaign that has more billionaires in it than black people.
Also, we'll have the latest on protests in Baghdad and what may be fueling violence against anti-government demonstrators.
So stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your day.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Behind the Irishman, the official companion podcast for Netflix's new film, The Irishman. Behind the Irishman is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts, with new episode drops every Monday. Support also comes from Capital One, where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
An American graduate student imprisoned in Iran on espionage charges has been freed, just as an Iranian scientist was granted early release from a U.S. prison.
Iran's foreign minister tweeted about the exchange, and President Trump confirmed the release by Iran of American student Xiaowei Wang.
And NPR's Peter Kenyon is following the story from Istanbul. Peter, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Scott.
And what do we know about this prisoner exchange?
Well, the first word came from Mohammad Javad Zarif, that's the Iranian foreign minister, and he wrote that this Chinese-American scholar, Xiaowei Wang, who'd been arrested in 2016, will be joining his family soon. That's what Zarif wrote. He also posted about the Iranian scientist, Masoud Soleimani. He'd been arrested in Chicago last year. Zarif thanked everyone involved, especially the Swiss government, for acting on behalf of the U.S., as it frequently does in matters involving Iran. President Trump and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo also weighed in, announcing Wang's coming return to the United States. There'd been some speculation for some time that a prisoner exchange might be possible, and that heated up in recent days, and now it appears to have transpired.
Tell us about this U.S. grad student. He's been detained on charges that the U.S. says were groundless.
Exactly. Xiaowei Wang was a graduate student at Princeton. He specialized in Eurasian history. He's married, has a wife and a young son. His wife released a statement saying the family is complete once again, expressing their excitement at the prospect of seeing Wang again. He had been in Iran doing language studies and research for a doctoral dissertation when he was detained. He was charged with espionage, two counts, sentenced to 10 years in Iran's Evin prison. U.S. officials have always said the charges were bogus, that Wang never engaged in any spying activities. They also denied Iran's assertion that Wang had been sent to Iran by the government.
And what about the Iranian scientist who can go home?
Yes, 49-year-old Dr. Masoud Soleimani. He was working in Iran. He left on sabbatical, came to the U.S., and was arrested in Chicago on charges of violating trade sanctions against Iran. He was imprisoned. He was apparently nearing release under a plea agreement when this exchange was just announced. Foreign Minister Zarif posted photos of himself with Soleimani flying back to Iran.
Obviously, relations between the United States and Iran have been at a bit of tense point for some time now. Does this prisoner exchange signal something larger, some kind of rapprochement between the two countries?
I would be a bit cautious to predict anything like that. There's no question this prisoner swap stands in huge contrast to the generally negative bilateral relations U.S. and Iran have had. Ever since the U.S. pulled out of the 2015 nuclear deal, reimposed sanctions, the government of Hassan Rouhani in Iran's been under heavy attack from hardliners, accused him of making a bad deal and letting Iran down. There are also other people we should note, other Americans being held, businessman Shamak Namazi, his octogenarian Iranian father, Bakr, who was imprisoned when he went to Iran to try and get his son released. But, you know, this exchange does show that Iran and the Trump administration can agree on something. And in this case, I'd say the families of Zhiwei Wang and Masoud Soleimani are the primary beneficiaries.
NPR's Peter Kenyon in Istanbul, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Scott.
The 2020 Democratic field was once hailed as the most diverse ever, but now the four frontrunners are all white, and three are men.
California Senator Kamala Harris ended her campaign, and the remaining candidates of color haven't qualified for the next Democratic debate. NPR's Juana Summers has been in Iowa all week to talk to voters and candidates. Juana, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
How did the shakeup in the campaign change what a lot of people are talking about this week?
So this is a conversation that has been going on for quite a while now, but in the last week, voters, activists, and even some candidates are really saying the quiet part out loud. After Senator Harris announced that she was going to be leaving the presidential race, it really seemed to raise alarm bells among some Democrats. The party is now grappling with this uncomfortable reality that when Democrats gather for their next debate in a couple of weeks, the candidates, at least so far, who have qualified to be on stage, they're all white.
What message is that sending, that we heralded the most diverse field in our history, and now we're seeing people like her dropping out of this campaign, not because Iowa voters had the voice. Voters did not determine her destiny.
Yeah, that was New Jersey Senator Cory Booker talking about Harris's decision to get out of the race. He and former Housing Secretary Julian Castro are among the most vocal candidates on this issue. They and some other prominent Democrats I've been talking with are making the point that this is not how a party that emphasizes diversity and fairness should represent itself.
Well, note, of course, this field also includes Mayor Buttigieg, who represents a milestone as a gay candidate. What would Senator Booker and Mr. Castro like to change about the debates or the primaries?
So this is where it gets kind of interesting. None of the candidates, including Senator Booker and Mr. Castro, are calling on the DNC to change the standards for the debate in December. That's just in a couple of days, and the DNC has made clear that they don't plan to do that. Julian Castro, though, he says he wants bigger changes, and he talked about that on a call with reporters earlier this week.
There's no reason that Iowa and New Hampshire, that hardly have any black people or people of color, should always go first in nominating a president.
And on Friday night, he took that even a little further. He told reporters here in Iowa that the next chair of the Democratic Party has to commit to making the presidential primary process more reflective of the country's diversity. He says if they don't, they shouldn't be in charge of the party's nominating process.
What are some of the other candidates saying?
So former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who recently jumped into the race, was asked about Booker's comments by CBS News' Gayle King. He says he was not worried about the current makeup of the field.
If you wanted to enter and run for president of the United States, you could have done that. But don't complain to me that you're not in the race. It was up to you.
And he's not the only candidate who is getting this question. Former Vice President Joe Biden said on Friday that while it's obvious that the folks on stage are not representative of the party, you can't dictate who's going to be able to stay in the race. That's the job of the voters.
Juana, you've spent some time talking with Iowans this week, and what do you hear from them about the field?
Yeah, so I landed in Iowa maybe an hour after Senator Harris announced that she was getting out of the race. And this week, I've been reporting mostly in communities of color across the state. So I talked to a lot of non-white voters about what they thought about the fact that the top tier of this field, at least right now, seems to be made up of white candidates. And frankly, a lot of them seem pretty frustrated. But there's also this other thing that I hear. I like to ask voters when I talk to them what quality is most important to them in the candidate, or what they're looking for. And one of the big things I've heard them toss around this week is words like viability. Or to put a finer point on it, they want someone who can win in November. And some of these voters of color, even explicitly, have made the point to me that they feel like a white candidate is the one that's best positioned to beat Donald Trump in November's election.
Juana Summers covers demographics and culture for NPR Politics. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
An attack in Baghdad yesterday threatens to turn months of anti-government demonstrations into all-out conflict.
Men in cars opened fire on protesters in the heart of the capital. They killed at least 26 people and wounded dozens of others.
NPR's Jane Araf joins us now from Baghdad. Jane, tell us what we know about the shooting yesterday and who were the victims?
Well, I talked to witnesses and they all say these were gunmen who came in the dark. They also cut the power around the square where protesters were gathered. They describe pickup trucks full of gunmen. And these gunmen opened fire on most of them unarmed protesters. Most of the victims were young men. They've been out there for weeks since early October, demanding a new government, demanding jobs, demanding their country back, an end to Iranian influence. The Interior Ministry also says that two policemen were killed. It wasn't just demonstrators. But interestingly, the Iraqi government says this was done by unknown gunmen. Even they are afraid to say who they are if they know who they are.
And how are people reacting today?
They're reacting with grief and with shock. I went to the square where it happened, near a bridge that leads to the Green Zone, and there were protesters gathered around candles, those little candles that burn with these thin flames that were set on the concrete, and they were gathered around the candles in bloodstained clothing from the protesters. This is what it sounded like. So one of the guys sobbing there, he's this huge guy, and he's got his face covered like a lot of the protesters do, and he's wearing this scary-looking skeleton mask, but he's just sobbing and sobbing and saying, I hope you're in a better place than we are now. And then as I was standing there and people were crying, more people started coming. People started gathering, women. This has really hit hard. It's been very tough for protesters, but this one is different.
That's hard to listen to. Jane, this has been going on for 2 months, violence against the demonstrators. More than 430 people have died. What kind of groups would want to attack these protesters this time?
You know, people are really careful about this because there are people being killed and being kidnapped as well, but most people think it's Iran-backed militias. A lot of this protest is about Iraqi officials, but it's also about getting Iran out of Iraqi affairs. And Iran, of course, has not taken kindly to that. And all of the people I spoke with here described an organized operation when these gunmen opened fire. I met a medic named Safa who treated some of the wounded. He's describing pickup trucks, five pickup trucks and three minibuses that came in with a large number of gunmen, he says, and different kinds of weapons. He says they also used tear gas and that red smoke that the military uses. And he said there were gunmen standing on the rooftops and in a parking garage shooting at people. And then he actually treated some of the wounded. And almost all of the witnesses gave a similar story.
That's NPR's Jane Arraf in Baghdad. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's Up First for Saturday, December 7th. I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon. Start your day here with us. We have a special Up First tomorrow, Sunday, a profile of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And Up First is back Monday with the news to start your day. You can follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And of course, you know, the news doesn't stop when this podcast ends. And we have a solution for that.
It's called Weekend Edition Saturday and Sunday. Find it on your NPR station at stations.npr.org.
An American, a Russian, and a Ukrainian walk into a bar. No, this is not the impeachment hearings. It's a comedy competition in Ukraine. I'm Gregory Warner. The high stakes of comedy in a country led by a comedian.
It's a social mission to unite the country.
On Rough Translation from NPR.
And just a reminder about donating before the end of the year to your NPR member station, which supports Up First. To get started with your donation to an NPR member station, visit donate.npr.org/upfirst or just text the word UP to the number 49648. We'll send you a text message with a link where you can find your local station and make your contribution. Message and data rates may apply, and you can visit npr.org/smsterms for privacy and text message terms.